Up next, Alaska now has a new congresswoman. She was just sworn in, and we have a historian on board to put this into perspective. You are listening to Juno Afternoon, and I have to tell you that our next guest never gets tired of writing about Alaska history. He's taught it for years at the University of Alaska Anchorage, written lots of books, including one of my favorites, Frigid Embrace, about Alaska's relationship with the federal government. But Professor Steve Haycox's specialty, I think, is writing about political page-turners. And Mary Peltola's swearing-in ceremony in Washington, D.C. this afternoon is just another example. And, of course, the wild ride is far from over for Mary Peltola, although she will fill out the remainder of Congressman Don Young's term, a seat that hasn't changed hands for about a half a century and may yet change hands again if Peltola doesn't win her race in November for the next two-year term. But welcome, Steve. And I have to say, maybe I'm biased, but I think Alaska politics is much more interesting than the politics of other states. Do you agree?
Well, we are unique in a lot of ways. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure to talk to folks in Juneau. We are unique, and our political history and our political present are certainly entertaining at very least.
Well, the U.S. House seat is kind of had an interesting history prior to Mary, because Congressman Don Young wound up getting that seat because Nick Begich, who was congressman, died. And I can't even remember in the circumstances when he was on the ballot. Nick Begich had died at that time, and I think he still won. I don't know. What's that
story?
Well,
that's pretty fascinating. That's true. The presumptive death process was not complete. And so Nick Begich appeared on the ballot. Had it been complete, he wouldn't have. And in fact, in the initial go around, Don Young was beat by a dead man. But there's an interesting closure here that I'm not sure too many people are aware of. In the Democrat primary in 1973, after the presumptive death hearing and after the 1972 election, there were three people who vied for that seat, or vied for the nomination from the Democratic Party. They were Peggy Begich, Nick Begich's widow, Emil Nagy, the Alaska Native leader, and Chancy Croft. And of course, of those three, Emil won the nomination, but he lost to Don Young in the election. So it's rather interesting that a Native lost the first run against Don Young, and a Native has won what we might call the last run at Don Young's seat. And another interesting aspect of that to me, the campaign slogan that Don Young ran on in 1973, that special election, was the congressman for all Alaskans. There was a sort of a implicit little dig there that Emil was only going to represent the Native people of Alaska. And now we come again all the way around that circle, and Mary Peltola has made it very, very clear that she is indeed the congresswoman for all Alaska.
Well, she certainly seems to minimize. I think she states that she's proud of her Native heritage, but when she's on those national talk shows, she keeps emphasizing that I represent all Alaskans.
Indeed. And I think the atmosphere in Alaska politics is considerably different now than it was 50 years ago. And I think that probably most voters, speculating here, but I certainly hope, will recognize that this congressperson works for all of Alaska by working for the issues that are significant and important to Alaska. Mary has spelled those out. That includes resource development, economic issues, I think she will be on point. I found it very interesting. The news came out today that she's hired Don Young's chief of staff to be her chief of staff. She has been, when she was in the state legislature and the state house from 2003 to 2009, she was well noted for her bipartisan effort. She headed the bipartisan Bush caucus, but she also worked with a group that included at the time Lisa Murkowski to try to come up with a good budget fix for Alaska. So she has a reputation of inclusion.
You know, it's so interesting, too, because I believe that her father campaigned for Don Young when she,
yes,
she was a little girl. So she has that memory. So she has a habit of crossing over. And I've noticed that when the network anchors interview her, talk show hosts, that they try to get her to say something bad about her opponents. And she's I wouldn't say that she is a you know, someone who's been in the national limelight and has that kind of experience, but she was very skillful in sidestepping their attempts to pry that out of her.
She's a very bright woman, and her focus is not on partisan politics, and it's not on ideology. Her focus is positive, very positive. Let's see what we can do. Let's find the common ground and work from there. She's been extraordinarily successful at it as a politician, and I think she will be now.
So let's talk about the general election where she has to go through all of this again. And maybe you could talk about some of the quirkiness of this scenario that we see coming towards us.
Well, ranked choice voting, of course, has changed things. It makes it more difficult for extreme ideologues to prevail because a majority of the voters are really not, in my view anyway, any experience. I've been in Alaska 52 years. Majority of Alaskans seem to be much more oriented toward personality and toward their trust in who they're voting for rather than an ideology that that person may stand for. So I think it was very interesting in this primary, or not primary, but in this short seat, we might call it, the 4 months that Mary is sworn in for today, that the two Republicans left on the ballot, Nick Begich and Sarah Palin, really were pretty aggressive in attacking each other. And I think that that aggression probably was somewhat responsible for the 34% of the voters who voted for Nick Begich as their first choice chose Mary Peltola as their second choice. They somehow didn't want to vote for Sarah Palin. We'll see how that plays out in the November election. I think the circumstances are a little bit different because voters will be focused on a two-year term and not 4 months, and the turnout will be greater than it was for this recent election. So it'll be very interesting to see how that plays out. But ranked choice voting has changed the landscape.
Absolutely. But what about the players? I mean, what makes this historically such an interesting election?
Well, aside from the fact that Mary Peltola is the first Alaska native and the first woman to be voted into the United States Congress, Sarah Palin, of course, has her interesting history of having been ostracized by the Republican establishment in Alaska and making common cause with the Democratic minority in the state legislature when she was governor and accomplished a number of very important things. And then the reputation that will stay with her for all of her life, she quit and ceased to be governor by her own choosing. That never happened before. That's extremely historic, perhaps negatively so. And then, of course, Nick Begich carries the name of his grandfather, but he's the only one of the Begich family who is not a Democrat and who's not a, we might call, progressive liberal. He was raised outside of Alaska on the East Coast in a conservative family and has very solid conservative credentials. So in many ways, this is this is a very interesting election coming up.
I mean, how you can't make this stuff up that you have, you know, someone who ran for vice president of the United States in this mix, as well as someone who is the grandson of the man who held this seat. You just can't. I mean, you couldn't.
Indeed.
It would be fodder for a novel, maybe.
Well, if you put it in a novel, I think your editor would spend quite a bit of time trying to talk you out of it.
Well, you know, a couple of things that I wanted to talk to you about before we go is Chancey Croft. We've heard the news recently that he has passed, and he was very important in our state's history. He was Senate president and played a key role with the permanent fund dividend. And, you know, I just thought maybe you could say a few words about Chancey Croft.
Chancey was a gifted leader again. During his Senate presidency, the state was trying to come to grips with the implications of all of this oil money and how the state should try to get its fair share, if you will. That was a phrase that Chancey Croft used often when he was Senate president. He did indeed pull together a major coalition in the state legislature to put in place the package that we still have basically today, which is taxing production and investing the royalty share that Alaska has in oil production and how to handle that, the right of way tax. He was equally important. Jay Hammond didn't think that the permanent fund would survive legislative action. And when the legislature voted a permanent fund, which was of course, as I think most Alaskans know, a favorite project of Jay Hammond, he vetoed it. And what Chancey Croft did was to pull together a coalition to vote a constitutional amendment and put it on the ballot, which was approved by the voters. So he was a monumental leader in state politics. The fact that he was a Democrat, and I think we could describe him today as a progressive liberal, didn't get in the way of his focus on what was going to work for Alaskans and what would be the best. He was very proud of that constitutional amendment that gives us the permanent fund and subsequently the dividend.
You know, that's so interesting. You know, we've lost so many people that have recently played a key part in our state's history. And I want to just jump to the national, international scene. You know, I am just astounded by, or I shouldn't be, how much news coverage there has been with the death of Queen Elizabeth. And, you know, I just wonder what it says about Americans so absorbed in that. And, you know, I've read some articles online from Indigenous peoples, African Americans, kind of saying, you know, she represents colonialism to us. I mean, she was a wonderful lady, but
she navigated that dilemma, I thought, quite remarkably. She maintained her dignity. Excuse me. She maintained her dignity. She was, in fact, the crown queen of an imperial empire. During her tenure, which began in 1953, that empire shrank and shrank and shrank. And I think that in her heart of hearts, she was not unhappy to see that go. Brits today, I think, from the commentary that I have read, would like to honor her for her duty and for her constant stability, her presence, while at the same time celebrating the demise of that empire and dissociating themselves from the colonialism, which it was her, it fell to her to represent that so long as it lasted and the pieces of it that lasted. I thought she did a superb job of navigating that carefully.
Well, it's just interesting, and we just have about 30 seconds left. Why do you think we Americans have such a hunger for that royal pageantry?
It's remarkable, isn't it? The president, we expect to fulfill two roles here. The first one is that ceremonial role, and the other one is to be a good administrator. in the parliamentary system, those are separated, and the Queen doesn't do a lot of administrating. The Americans like celebrity, and the Queen was the celebrity of the 20th century.
I guess. Well, Steve Haycox, thank you so much for coming to share your insights. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me. Best wishes.
Thanks, Steve. Always good to talk with you.